And then you said that you were out with some people from the show Swamp People or something like that.
Yeah, I used to be married to Terrell Evans, who's one of the stars on Swamp People.
And okay.
We were together.
My cousin's friend or something was on that show at some point too. So what happened?
When he first was on season 10, the first season he was on, and they asked us to go out there camping on one of the episodes they interviewed me about the Honey on the Swamp Monster, and then they wanted us to go camping out there and see if anything would happen. And that was that time I was telling you where we went out there and put the motion cameras up, and we got there right at dark. The thing threw a stick towards us, and the two camera guys we took, it was kind of like a last minute thing. They're like, okay. And Terrell's like, we're going deep. And he got someone to drop us off on this island that was sort of in the center of the swamp. And we just started walking towards the middle, and it was getting dark pretty quickly. And those two camera guys, I think they were like from the city somewhere. They'd never been out and spent the night in a swamp. They might have been filming on a boat a bunch of times with the other cast members, you know, hunting alligators. But they'd never, I don't think they'd ever really been out in the middle of the swamp like that to spend the night. And I don't think they were very comfortable. And so it was quite a experience, because I just had this feeling, because we were pretty much in the area where there had been, you know, several sightings of this thing. And I just had that feeling that, you know, whatever it was, throwing through the stick and then beating on the tree with a stick in the far distance. And then when it got dark and everybody we sat around the fire for a little while talking, and then when we decided to go in the tents and zip up at the top of the tent. You know, some of the tents, they have a screen and you could see out the top. And I kept watching, like, because I could hear something walking. And I'd stick my head up to try to peek up there to see if I could see anything. And at one point, I nudged Terrell. I was like, get up, go check it out. And he's like, he was getting aggravated. And, of course, then the cameraman's, you know, got their cameras out to watch him get out of the tent and go look around. And then he come back and he goes, it's just a rabbit. I'm like, a rabbit don't sound like that.
Unless it's the rabbit
Grail. He saw a rabbit, you know. And, of course, you know, they put that part in the show. But when they went back in their tents to zip up, they didn't have their cameras rolling all night. And I was not going to close my eyes and go to sleep out there, because I knew what was out there. And so but I heard this thing walking like on 2 feet, circling where we were. And so the next day, as soon as daylight come, we packed up, took the cameras down and left out of there. And when we got back to the camp, that's when we looked at the camera to see what was it, you know, if anything had captured anything. And that's when we saw that it was one little frame that was something hairy had leaned over, and it caught the very edge of it that had hair on it. Not, it looked like little short pieces of hair, but it could have been off on the hand, or I don't know, but I just felt like whatever that was probably the same thing. That my grandfather, same type of thing, that didn't want us there, was probably trying to, you know, and probably curious, like, what are these people doing out here in the middle of the swamp? Because, you know, a lot of people don't go camping that far in the swamp. I mean, and a lot of the hunters and fishermen that go out there, they don't go that deep, because if they kill a deer or something, they don't want to drag it over all them logs for miles and miles. So that's why a lot of people don't go that deep in the swamp to hunt and fish. And that's why some of these people, they go, oh, I've been out there hunting, I never seen nothing, you know. Well,
yeah, you know. Yeah, I've had those conversations with hunters, and the areas, you know, in Texas is very big. And I've talked to people who've been out in very desolate areas out in West Texas, very desolate areas out, you know, and they'll get too far away from their vehicle. And I had a guy out near Fort Stockton who shot a mule deer. I believe that's what he said it was. and he had to he was dragging it, and something started following him. And then he realized that trying to carry a deer over a 2 mile, you know, because he just got too far out there. And eventually, whatever it was getting dark. And then when it got dark, he just gave up and left it because it was just too far out there. And I'm going like, yeah, you know, that was a very silly thing to do because, you know, you're too far out there. And something, he said something on two legs was stalking him. He didn't get a good look at it. He's pretty convinced it was a Sasquatch of some type and that there were stories of this thing. And when he was walking out there, when he was walking on his way out there, he saw what he thought was a partial print of a very large foot. And that's what made him think that there was something out there. This guy, I've known him for years. And so I told him, I said, yeah, there's probably something out there. I mean, this is, you know, people get too far out the field, you know, and that's where you're going to have your encounters. That's where something's going to be seen, you know. And I used to go out in the country all the time. And then I had an encounter with what I believe was a dog man. And then I kind of was like, well, you know, I still would go out in the woods sometimes, but I tried to stay out of it as much as possible. Even though my encounter actually happened in town, I thought these things have to be out there. And I would hear stories of them in here in Central Texas of my dad's family's, my dad's mother's family. And they have a lot of property out near Burnet, and they would go hunting out there. And when I was a kid, they would tell me stories of these Bigfoot type creatures that would hide behind trees. And, you know, you didn't want to kill a deer too far out because, you know, by the time somebody came around to pick you up and, you know, whatever, it might take it, you know. And it's just these weird stories that I had heard as a kid. And I thought, I didn't know if they were trying to scare me or if it was for real, you know. And so, and so people don't realize that like, you know, yeah, I went out there, I went hunting out there, I didn't see nothing like what you just said. You know, it's like, how far out did you go? Because obviously you're not going to go deep, deep down in there where people don't normally go, because that's where you're going to see it. You know, I had a friend, when I was in school, they swear they saw a Bigfoot. This was in Milam County, and there's a lot of weird stuff in Milam County. And they were out on their ATVs, and they drove their ATVs so far and so deep down into the woods that one of them ran out of gas, and the other one, they had to drive the other one back as far as they could before it ran out of gas. And then it got dark, and of course, you know, they had to walk back, and they kept hearing what they thought was something paralleling them and stalking them. And this was when we were kids. And I was convinced, you know, even as a kid, that that's probably what that was. It was a Bigfoot, you know, or something like that. I mean, I was thinking that's probably what that was. It was stalking them, but they have no way to know. They couldn't see it. It was dark, and they were getting to where they could see porch lights of the ranch, you know, and so they were, you know, they were getting hopeful, you know, we're almost back. And the next day, they found their four-wheeler like tumped over and thrown into a tree. So, you know, that was pretty much confirmation, as far as I'm concerned, that something was out there. But that's because they drove miles and miles and miles over and, you know, over into like three or four different ranches that were all kind of connected. And it was like well over like, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 acres of land, you know, and they were just way the heck out there in the middle of nowhere. You know, that's where you're going to find stuff that you don't want to find, you know, and people don't really typically go hunting deep, deep, deep into the woods. You know, I mean, like you said, they do it on the outskirts of the edge or whatever. And, yeah. So I had this hunter telling me one time, well, I've never seen nothing up in Wisconsin. And I've been all over the woods. I was like, have you been deep, deep into the woods? Because that's where people are seeing these things, you know, these creatures. So yeah, you're right about that. That's absolutely the truth too.
That campsite that my grandfather and them built out there, the way they found that, he used to be a pilot, and he had a twin engine plane, and he used to fly over the swamp, and they spotted this area. They thought that would be really good hunting territory. So, and the way they found it again by boat is my grandfather took a bag of flour, and they threw it on the sandbar from the plane, and it, I guess the flour went all over. So they went back later by boat, and that's how they found the area that they wanted to get out, and then they went on foot from there into down way deep. They had to go over another canal, and it was called the Lateral Canal, and then they had to go further in, and that's where they ended up building their campsite. And then, so they used to have to take their supplies, even they were going to take a boat back there too, so they would have a boat that they could put in the sloughs and the ponds that were deeper in that area that you couldn't get to by the river. So they were they had to drag the boat by hand, a little boat, and take the motor and you know, all their supplies had to be trekked in by on foot from the boat and go deeper into the swamp. So when they would go out there, they'd stay a while. So,
yeah,
you know, that's why they were deep out there in the swamp, because they didn't want to go where other people were and the other hunters. You know, it was kind of a very remote area. So, but these hunters that just go for the day and pull up at on a sandbar and get out and go into the swamp, they're not going to go that deep just to go shoot a deer or a turkey or whatever, because they don't want to have to tote it back, or a big hog, or so they're not going to go that deep in the swamp. And if they do, they're probably going to get lost. We've known a lot of lost hunters that got lost out there and had to be found. Like, you had to send a search party after them because you get so turned around.
And people that don't realize how easy it is to actually get turned around out in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Very.
And I heard, like, you know, you got to learn look at which side the moss is growing on the tree. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you which way you got to get out of there, you know, like, so things like that, or which way the, you know, watch which way the river's flowing.
Yeah.
Or the bayou.
So. Yeah, you're right. And you yourself, though, you've never been lost out there, you know your way around there pretty well, right?
Well, I never really went to where I would go that far to where I would get lost. And because I was usually with someone, I'd never try to go out there by myself.
Well, that doesn't give me much confidence. I was going to say, let's go have an expedition. But then you said you don't know your way around. So heck no, I'm not going out there with you.
No, I would take a swamp guide that knows how to get me in and out of there. Like one of my family members who hunt out there and fish a lot. They know them bayous and sloughs, and you know. But nowadays you could put the 360, Life 360, and know, see where you are out there.
Oh yeah.
So maybe navigate that way, like Google Earth. Find your way out, maybe.
Well, you know,
of course, when you're in it, it's hard to do that. Like, you know.
You know, Cato Lake, or Cato Lake, however you want to pronounce it, in East Texas, it's so thick that people go missing out there all the time. You know, you can't, there's no way that, I mean, you go out there and it's dark because the trees just hang over everything. And people will go out there in the daytime, and then they try to find the way back, and they can't. You know, and I mean, I read, sorry, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, I've thought about doing like a little swamp, it would be a night vision tour by boat, though, mostly, and take people that wanted to go explore, like just a personal tour. Like, my son has taken some friends on some swamp tours like that, and our little flat boat that wasn't from around here. But I thought about doing something where you just take someone that wanted to go out there and explore and go down this through the Honey Island Swamp, down the Porter's River, and if there is land when the water isn't really high, then they could get out on the bank and look around. And And then, so it would be like a personal nighttime tour. So we talked about doing something like that. Just take people to, because I get a lot of people that want to go camping out there, or go on a, you know, go explore out there. And the big swamp tour boats, they don't go that deep in there. They go, you know, we would go where the big boats can't get to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the only time that I've been up to the Poydras was when I was going tubing, and they kind of had us doing the little thing. Like, they would kind of take you out there and show you where you could, you know, start at, and then they just kind of let you go after that. But like, I think that would be a pretty. The Poydras River. Going up.
Poydras River.
Yeah, just a little farther up.
So you're talking about right behind that Chevron off of the interstate. And there's like a bar restaurant towards the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have a kayaking tour out of there that she guides some people in kayaks. And then I think there is a guy that's doing some swamp tours in them. Like, you know, they're not the huge boats, but from what I understand, he takes a group out there.
Yeah.
It's pretty out and through Poydras. I mean, it's a different look than what they do downriver by the other swamp tours and and Maple Slough and Gum Bayou and all that.
Right.
Where they take you to see the big, big alligators that they feed with chicken.
Oh, yeah.
To keep them there.
I definitely didn't do any of those. Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, Dana. We could do a documentary. And my idea of it, and I'm just going to let the audience know, was just like to head out there and maybe, I don't know, do you know Ken Gerhard? Because he goes on location a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, you know Ken?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. We'll get Ken and we'll have him and maybe Lyle Blackburn and everybody. And I'll just take some like photos of y'all like at the store. And then, like at the edge of the swamp, and then y'all go ahead and go into the camp and go look, and then I'll kind of run things from the hotel room, and I'll have the radio, and y'all can radio back to me what's going on, and then I'll do the photo op again when you get back with your evidence, and then y'all can Photoshop me into the little.
Sounds like you did a lot in this one.
Yes, into the little cabin like there on the dock. You just Photoshop me in.
Yeah.
And that, then, and that's how I'll do it. And then if you find anything, then definitely photo. I'm in there with I found it. That's
right.
Me.
Right.
So that's my idea for that.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe we could. And then that's about as far as I'll go, though. Y'all go ahead and go in there and take care of all that stuff. Zane, you can do it by proxy for me. You can represent me.
Yeah, I'll take a little helmet with like a light on it. You know.
Yeah.
You could put a camera on one of those little. With a little helicopter thing.
Yeah, hey.
The little drone.
You take a drone
take
in
there. Drone.
A drone, yeah.
Glamping. They call it glamping. I'll bring my DVR. And
bring the RV.
So I can watch, you know, some shows and some stuff, because I don't want to be out in the middle of that with that stuff out there. I mean, I'm not big on the whole idea of being around Bigfoot and Dogman. I don't mind talking about it. People are always saying, hey, yeah, you should go out there, boots on the ground, stuff like that. I was like, I admire your courage. I have seen what I'm going to see, and I'm not really looking to go and confront or face-to-face with any of these things again. I've already done it, and I'm not in no big hurry. I believe when people tell me their stories, like they'll be like, you can come out here and look. I'm like, no, I believe you. You know, I don't need to go out there to see it. I pretty much know that that's probably, you know, it's there. You know, I have done a little bit more on location since I got married about almost 4 years ago now. She's forced me to go to places and do things, and I've had to kind of deal with that, you know, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it to a degree, but, you know, I'm also like okay with not doing it and just talking about it because, you know, and I had somebody on Facebook the other day was firing off on me in some group. He's like, oh, well, I'm boots on the ground. I go out there and I tromp all over the stuff and I mess with cow poop and all those other. And I'm like, well, that's good. That's great. You're doing an awesome job. Continue to do that. And when you go missing, I will tell everyone that you were a valiant soul who was looking for this particular cryptid and you probably found it. And I will still be doing my show and whatever, you know, and that's I'm just not going to do that.
You've made
know?
The greatest sacrifice for the research community. Thank you.
You have sacrificed yourself for king and country. But I admire y'all's courage. And I think that the people that live out in those areas and the Cajuns, you know, they're some of the toughest people, man. I tell you what, I used to.
Some of the funnest.
Yeah. I used to have a buddy who was Cajun and he lived in San Marcos. And he went to school with a girl I used to date years ago, and he was one of her good friends. And he was wild. We go out there at Devil's Backbone, and he would just go nuts out there, running around out there. And he'd go wandering all by himself for days out there, you know. And I was like, yeah, that's great. That's awesome. You know, that's just not something that I'm interested in doing, you know, because, like I said, there's a lot of unstable phenomena out there. And like what you were saying, Dana, all joking aside, what you were saying about how people don't know, like the swamp people, those producers, the directors, those camera guys, they have no idea what's out there. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I watched a documentary one time where these guys had gone, they were showing the funnel web spider from the Sydney funnel web out in Australia. And they have several different species. And there's one that was, that's very, it was just, they're all over the place in this wooded area. And these people, I guess, were like homeless, and they had been camping out there. And this guy went out there, and right around the area where they had their had their fire, he found like three or four of them right there on the trees. And he was picking them up, and they were just very highly aggressive, super, the most venomous spider, you know. And he's like, ignorance is bliss. That's absolutely, ignorance is bliss. And you're just like, wow, you know, I just couldn't, you know, I don't want to be out there. And something, you know, something happens and you're so far away from, from help or whatever, you know. And but it's fascinating to talk about.
We got the cottonmouth snakes and those big hairy swamp spiders, and they'll jump in the boat with you that's the size of your hand, looks like a tarantula. Or the worst ones are the ones that stretch their big webs, the banana spiders that have stretched their webs, and you're going through on a boat and your face gets caught in it. I'll jump out the boat.
How do you deal with that?
Or have a snake fall in the boat with you, and then, you know, if it's the cottonmouth, you want to jump out of the boat. So, yeah, it's quite a experience.
Well, you know, if I ever get, you know, really bored and work slows down, I just actually just texted Ken Gerhard right now while we're on the show. I just texted him right now and asked him about the Honey Island Swamp, and when he texts me back, maybe about going out there.
I mean, Louisiana is definitely a good,
and then we could all go out there on a little tour, but let's go on the kid friendly tour where it's just like, you know, like it's, you know what I mean? Like let's do the kiddie ride where you just do the outskirts, and then you and Ken can go into the deep part of the, and I'll stay back in the area where people survive.
They're going to need your might in case it shows up.
I had somebody recently do what?
We'll leave you at the camp. So
yeah, but I don't even want to be by myself at the camp. I don't want that either.
Yeah, you'd be fine.
Well, leave me with the weapons at least.
We'll leave some Cajun cooks with you. They could be cooking some alligator.
There you go. There you go.
Or something.
Because I'm okay with being, you know, in the wooded area where I'm from, because I know it like the back of my hand, like, you know, Devil's Backbone, you know, I know all these woods around here, but I don't want to be in that swamp. The swamp bothers me, you know? I mean, it really does. It's just something about that terrain. I just don't like it. And I haven't spent a whole lot of time in it, and I don't want to, but I can tell you this, I've been in the jungle and that was unnerving. That was bad enough, you know, but it just seems like the swamp, it just seems so much, it's just sinister. It's just
it's like a jungle.
It is, you know?
Yeah.
The more wet.
It is a jungle.
Yeah, and I just don't like stuff that can creep up in the water like that. It's just so primeval. And I was just thinking, like, you know, I don't have a problem being in the woods now, you know, so much. I don't mind it. I grew up in the woods for 15 years of my life, and I used to get a kick out of my friends from the city coming out there, and we'd tromp out in the woods with our snake charmers, and we'd be popping copperheads by flashlight. And we thought it was just the coolest thing ever. But then after I had my encounter when I was like, you know, 15, you know, like in late 1990, that was it. I was just like, you know what? There's stuff out there now. I know it exists. It's not a joke. It's not a game. And I just quit going out and running around. And I was much more aware and much more cautious in that there's things out there that we don't know, we don't understand. And like you, you know, you are hyper aware because your grandfather, Harlan Ford, I mean, he was 100%, you know, he saw it. And he even caught footage of it, caught, you know, the 8mm footage of it. So you got to think, you know, somebody who spent so much time out there and he knew that it existed, and you grew up living that life, you know, and then you talk to all these witnesses, you know, it exists. So, I mean, there's no doubt in your mind. And so, you know, when you go out there, that's in the back of your mind that this thing is out there and you have to be careful. And we don't know exactly what it does, what it eats, you know, all we know is that people go missing, and it may or may not be contributed to that, but it definitely could be. And you have to be aware, you know. And so that my thing is just, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's like when I know that something is there or it's in that area, you know, I'm okay with not going out there and seeing it. I am completely okay with that. You know, and there was this guy, and he was on one of the groups, and he was talking about, I want to see a dog man. I want to see a dog man. And he goes, and I don't want to hear people say, well, no, you don't, you know, from people who've actually seen one, this and that. And I told him, I'm not even 100% sure what these things are, if they're 100% physical, you know, if they don't have some sort of supernatural quality to them that we don't understand.
Right.
And I don't necessarily mean magic, because I think that magic at some point is going to blend together with our science and we're going to understand a lot of things. But at this point, we still just,
like, you know, it travels in different time dimensions. Yeah.
Yeah. And that brings me to my next.
We've seen.
You go ahead.
I was just say, we, you know, another thing that we've encountered out there, like I've seen it with my family, a UFO. I know people might think I'm crazy, but I saw it with my, and it wasn't just me. It was our whole family was out. It was we had another camp in Angie, Louisiana, which is a little bit north of here. And I was probably about 14, and I remember seeing this thing came over the water. It was shining lights down and like blue light on the river, and then it kind of moved up, and then it moved over our camp, and then it shot straight up in the air and disappeared. And we all saw it, and it was like, I'll never forget that. And then my dad had an encounter out there with, when he was hunting. He said this thing that was shaped like a big football, like a gold football, was hovering over the swamp, and he was out there hunting with our uncle. And he said wherever they would go, it would follow, like kind of show up and follow them. So he just sat down by a tree, figured, well, if it's going to get me, it's going to get me. And he said a whole, like he said, it was like he was sitting there, and the next minute it was like it was dark, like the whole day had gone by. And then I said, well, you might have been abducted for a day, you know. I don't know. But he said he called my mom, and my uncle called his wife and said, if we don't come out of here, if we don't come back this weekend, this is what happened. And they were very serious. And my dad still today, he's old now, but he still can remember, and he tell it like it just happened. He said, I'll never forget that. He said, I could see that thing as clear as day. So then you think, well, maybe this thing out there's like alien almost. Like maybe it's some type of alien that got left behind or
dropped off.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, because that swamp, you know, there's places out there man hasn't even gone, mm-hmm. and no telling what is out there or what it could exist, or maybe, you know. And of course, NASA has a facility on the other side of it, but like a buffer zone. It but like on the other side of Honeyland Swamp, they test rockets out there. And, you know, we used to think, well, what if they made something in a lab and it got away and just ran out in the swamp? I mean, there's been all kinds of theories about what it could be, but
well, let me ask you this, so. Dana. This is important. I mean, like, what is the earliest, like, from what you've uncovered in your investigations of this creature, what is the earliest sightings of this thing? Like, what do you?
Well, from what I know about was my grandfather was the first one to report the sighting and, you know, and go public with it after in 74, after he found the tracks. But in 63 is when he first encountered it. And that man, old man Williams, it was around the same time, he was another eyewitness. And everything after that was all these other people came after that. So I don't know. I mean, if he was that's just the first one I know about. I don't know of anybody before that who had seen it.
Do you think it ties into the Rougarou legend?
I think it probably does. I think it's probably either related to in the same type of family, because the Rougarou, of course, the Rougarou, they talk about it being more spiritual and
like a curse.
Yeah, someone gets cursed and they become the Rougarou with it because they've been cursed. And then, the only way the curse could be broken, they've got all these different, it's like a werewolf, like the werewolf. But so the swamp monster, the Honey on Swamp Monster, we don't know where it originated, what the story was behind that other than people seeing it. It wasn't like my great grandparents were Cajun and they used to tell us the story of the Rougarou growing up. They would scare children to make them go to bed early, like the Rougarou's gonna get you if you don't do this or that. So it was more like, we just knew about it growing up from our Cajun ancestors who were in from the Cajun country that's further south in Louisiana from here. Like Napoleonville, my grandparents were from Napoleonville. Yeah, she spoke Cajun French, and when we go visit her, she'd tell us, that's how they would tell bedtime stories, and that was one of the stories. You better be good, or the Rougarou's gonna get you.
Yeah, how it was with us when I was growing up. My great aunt, my tia Jova, tia in Spanish it means aunt. My mom's Hispanic and my dad's white, but she would always talk about the Cadejo and the Amarillo and all these spooky stories, the Manos Paludos, which is like the hairy hand and all this other stuff. And I thought, this is just a bunch of silly nonsense. And we would have to go, even though my mother was no longer Catholic, every year we had to go down to South Texas to San Juan to light candles, which was the most boring thing in the world for me as a kid. I just hate, and the drive down there was long, boring. And I just was trying not to poke my eyes out so I didn't have to look at, all the terrain gets further past Alice, Texas, it gets ugly. And so I'm just like, I hate going to the Rio Grande Valley. And it wasn't a fun trip. It wasn't like it was a good time for me. And so, I'm driving down there. So in order, I guess, to make it more pleasant or whatever, my tia would tell us these stories. And then my mom would always be like, oh, don't tell them that because they're going to get scared. And then after the third or fourth time, you've heard these stories before. And that's really all they are to you, is just stories. You don't really believe it. But Matia would tell it with such fervor and conviction that, and Zane, you know her before she passed. She was a very colorful person.
She's funny. She's a very funny person.
She was believing it. I mean, she was like, oh, yeah, that, La Llorona is there. And she lost her kids, and she found you by the water.
She's gonna come get you, mijo.
And then you're gonna go away with her to the bad place. And I don't know what that bad place was. And I'm going like, this is disturbing. And then you're like 7, 8 years old, And then by the time you get down to the mission, you're lighting candles like crazy and praying that And at me, I was sitting there hoping that these creatures wouldn't get me. But then as I got older, I thought that cocuy, it's just the mentiras. It's just stories to scare kids. And so, literally the night before I saw the dog man looking creature in my hometown, Matia told me, she goes, don't be going out with all those hoodlums and doing all that crazy stuff and throwing the eggs at the houses and all that, because that's what we did. And she was like, you're going to have something bad happen to you. And I didn't believe her. I never believed all that, And then once I saw it, it all became real to me. And then I thought, holy crap. All these stories that I had heard, all this nonsense, like you grew up hearing about the Rougarou because that was your culture. I grew up hearing about the Hombre Lobo. And then, and the Cadejo, and I thought, man, this is silly stuff, you know. But then it's real. I mean, like this is a real thing. Like, and so yeah, it seems like bedtime stories to tell children, and or to keep them in line. But yeah, and I'm not saying that all the stories are real. You know, I've heard stories about La Chusa and La Llorona. And all these different types of creatures, and the cucuy, you know, everybody has a cucuy, the fantasma, you know. And then when you actually encounter something and you see it with your own eyes, seeing is believing. And then it all becomes real, you know, and then you're thinking the possibilities. I haven't seen all these other creatures, but the possibility is that this could be real, where there's smoke, there's fire. There's reason why the old timers would always talk about these things, because to them it was very real and they existed.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that the Honey Island Swamp Monster, you know, your grandfather, who kind of, you know, was the one that became famous for breaking the ground, you know, like kind of breaking the story on it, I guess. But, you've had all these people who've seen it. And so the stories of the Rougarou are going to be kind of tied into that, because there's a hairy creature that lives out in the swamp, and it, you know, does what it does. And so you interviewed people, and you had mentioned that some of them had seen a creature that had a snout. Can you expound upon that?
Well, one of the guys talked about it, saying that the face was very smooth, and it was more long, like a snout. And he said, but he had the long hair around the face that hung really long, and, you know, just said it was just the way he described it. It was similar to what my grandfather described, except he described the face as being more elongated. And so I thought that might have been what people like call the dog man, or, you know, the Rougarou, loop guru.
The loop guru. Do you have any, like, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, what are your opinions on that? Do you think that could be a creature that, if not is the Rougarou, but could actually appear, I mean, that has the appearance of a Rougarou, and it is it, yeah, in your opinion, a distinctly different creature than the Honey Island Swamp Monster?
I just think that it could be the same type of creature, because, you know, like they would say, the dog man, the Rougarou stands and walks on 2 feet too, and it's hairy, and, you know, people see it at a distance usually, so they're not like real close to it, but yet I would guess it would probably be in the same, it could be in the same family.
So, I mean, but not the same thing.
I don't really know, I wouldn't really know, because, you know, like when my grandfather, what he said it reminded him of was, it was more like something that would be in the ape family, but it looked too human. He said it looked kind of like orangutan, but more human, more like a man. So I don't know. And I know with the Rougarou, it's more like a werewolf type dog, like would be part like with the dog. So a dog,
like a hybrid.
So yeah. I guess it would be different.
So the person
but,
that,
but then,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just being in this area though, you know, with the Rougarou, Loop Guru in Louisiana, but that's talked about more down in French country. And then with the Honey Island Swamp Monster is more on this side of the lake, more closer to what people describe as a, like the Bigfoot, or they call it the skunk ape, or, you know, things like that.
That was another question I had about this creature. Does it give a smell? Do witnesses describe there being a smell?
Yeah, some of the witnesses talked about it having a smell. Like one of the the eyewitnesses said that he went on a tour with one of the swamp tour guides, and he said that they went up where these old houseboat, abandoned houseboats and camps were, and he said the tour guide, they kept talking about the smell, like a really, really bad smell, like dead animal. And he said the tour guide would say, oh, it's probably some type of dead animal floating around here. And everybody was sort of looking off. The tour guide was explaining and talking about something to the left side. And the guy said he looked off to the right, and he saw this thing squatting by one of them camps. And he said he didn't say anything because he wasn't sure what he was seeing. He thought maybe it's his, you know, but he said as they rounded the bend, you know, and everybody was talking about the smell, and the guy was saying, yeah, it's just probably a dead animal floating around. But he said when he got back to, he told his dad, because he had taken his dad on this as a birthday present to on a swamp tour, and he was telling his dad what he saw, and he said, and his dad said, why didn't you say something? He said, I was just stunned, and I just stared at this thing, and I thought, but he said it had like the long hair, wiry looking hair, but the face looked like leather, and the eyes, he said, looked like yellowish, like they were sick, like he might have been sick with something.
Jaundice.
But he said it was just a horrible looking thing. But he said at first he didn't say anything because he was just so stunned that he thought maybe I'm seeing something. But he did remember that the people on the boat were complaining about the smell. Oh, what is that smell? So he thought maybe it was that thing. That was one of the eyewitnesses that I had contacted me after that happened. That was probably about 10 years ago.
And Dana, when you were out in the swamp, and I'm not just necessarily with the Swamp People show thing that was going on, but just you've been out there doing your research and trying to collect information. Have you ever smelled anything out there?
So sometimes you get, there's bad smells, but then someone had told me that it's probably the swamp gas. I'm like, what? He said it was coming up from the mud. So I don't know if that's what I was smelling, because it could get pretty nasty smelling out there. But they call it like swamp gas. sometimes there's dead animals, though, you smell too, that is, you know, like something that died out there. But that's, I wouldn't have known if it was the creature or that. So,
and also I read that when Harlan and what was his friend's name, Billy Mills, yeah, when they came upon a hog that had been like its throat torn out, or it had been disemboweled, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, it had blood splattered all over everything, like it was a territorial thing, because the hog was left there. And the hook, when they first saw a couple hogs up in the woods like that with the throats ripped out and just left there, and they were dead a while because the flies were swarming. But when they got closer to the pond where they were going to go duck hunting, they saw water rippling, and they thought it was ducks on the water. So they got down, and they were like maneuvering through the cattails and all to part it to see if they could see ducks. And that's when they saw the hog laying there, and it was his hoof hitting the water, kicking like it had been just recently killed. Like it was, I guess, not completely dead yet, or maybe it was the nerves causing the hoof to kick the water, and that's what was causing the ripples. And he said there was blood splattered all over the place. It had ripped his throat out. And so that's where he saw some tracks in the sand, and that's when he decided he was going to go back with the plaster Paris and forecastings of that. And because, you know, they thought, well, some people said, oh, it might have been a gator did that. But a gator usually drags its prey off into their den. And up in the woods where the hogs were killed, or gators don't really go way up in the woods like that on dry land to go hunting hogs. But, and that, you know, gator's going to take what he attacks and take it down to his den, or yeah, eat it right there.
And the dens tend to be around the banks.
And there was another time someone had seen where a hog, like big hog, wild boar, was thrown up in a fork of a tree with his throat ripped.
That's what I was about. That was, you just answered my second, my next question. I was going to say, have you ever heard of hogs being laid in trees? Because that is a telltale sign. And another thing too, folks at home are listening. I have a lot of experience with hogs. They're bad around here in Central Texas. They're everywhere. They're freaking everywhere. And you can, they're year round kill. You can kill them year round. And a lot of counties will give you a bounty on the tail. You bring them a hog tail and you get a bounty. And so they're a nuisance animal. And so, you know, a predator typically is going to, if they're going to go after a hog, it's not going to be a big old wild boar hog. You know, it's going to be a younger one, a smaller one, because their hide is really tough and it's not an easy thing to kill, you know, without a gun or something, you know, and they're a dangerous animal. They're a very dangerous animal. They're such a weird animal too. They're not necessarily a prey animal. They're scavengers, you know, and they will kill and eat anything they can find. They'll eat. They're omnivores.
Bones and all.
Yeah.
They eat bones and all.
So. Bones and all. Yeah. They don't care. And so for a creature like to have been, you know, to kill a hog, just toss it up into a tree nonchalantly. How big were these hogs? Do you know?
This was a pretty big hog. That's why they were like thinking, what could have put it up there? Because we do have bobcats in this area, but you know, bobcats aren't huge animals. And then, but they do, some people have also claimed we have black panther here, but I was told once that they think they're black panthers, but they're like jaguars. It's just they look black until the light hits them a certain way, and then you can see the spots on them. But so that might could put one, but it would have to be a big cat to get this big hog, because the hog was probably a couple hundred pounds, you know, get it up the tree like that. But it was just like the throat was ripped out, like it killed whatever did it, just ripped the throat out, blood was dripping, and the hog was up in the fork of the tree.
That would have to be a big, strong animal. And you know what? A jaguar could do that. The jaguar is the third largest cat in the world. The largest, the male is a tiger male. And yes, the male tiger is bigger than the lion, folks. I had this argument with somebody the other day. And they're like, lion's the biggest animal. No, it's not either, okay? It's the tiger and then the lion. And then the jaguar is number three. And jaguars are very large and powerful animals. I've seen videos of them snatching up caiman and just swimming with them in their mouths, which is an amazing feat. And then taking them on to, you know, and eating them. And they are very, very much capable of killing a hog, but it depends on how heavy the hog is. Hogs are very dense animals. I can't really see. If a hog is 200-300 pounds, I can't see a jaguar would, you know, I don't think it would be dragging it up into a tree. I don't know about that. I don't know about that one. It would depend on the jaguar and it would depend on the hog. And I do believe that jags are all over the place. They're seen in South Texas, and I know that they do get black right there in New Braunfels. There's a little snake farm zoo. Zane, I think you've been to the with Tony. I took you guys. And Anthony, of course, you've been there a couple times, and they have a very beautiful black jaguar there. If you get up close, and you can get close to it too, you get up close to it, you can see the spots. But from a distance, uh-huh. I mean, hell, 10, 15 yards, you probably can't even tell. It just looks black. You know, the melanistic,
whatever. Yeah, because a lot of people have seen, we've seen a black panther, and then I remember this man that studied them and said, no. What you're seeing is a jaguar. It looks black, but they got the spots.
And they exist there too. I believe that they're mm-hmm. there. Yeah. I know that when my grandfather used to be a truck driver, and they stayed in Louisiana for a while. And I've told this story before on the show, but they believe that they saw a dog man looking type creature on the side of the road. And it was down on all fours, kind of squatted down, and it stood up on its hind legs. And it freaked them out, and my grandmother they were freaked out. I mean, she always told that story, and I know that Chief, who's been on my show, he's a good friend of mine. He's half Lapan Apache. He's been on the show a few times. He's an MMA fighter, and he's a recurring guest, and he heard that story. My grandmother told him and my brother and Scorpion, who's also been on the show, she told them that story, like that this thing stood up, you know, and it looked like almost like a cross between a hyena, a wolf, and a man. That's what she said. She had no way to describe, you know, what it was. And I believe it was just south of Alexandria where she saw that. And so, you know, these dogman creatures are all over they're all over Louisiana. And I know that I have a friend, and that she's the ex-girlfriend of a really good friend of mine, but we're still friends. I don't really talk to her that much anymore, but she's swarping down that the largest black cat she's ever saw, like, just jumped right out in front of their vehicle, right there near Baton Rouge. And she's like, we were just driving, and this thing just came, it leapt out in front in the road. And then she said it stopped for a second, and she was like, oh no, we're going to hit this thing. And then it just whoosh, jumped again right before they hit it. It was because it was so fast. She's like, you wouldn't believe. And it was big. It was really big. Like, the back was up as top as high as their SUV. That's bigger than any Jaguar I've ever heard of. I mean, I don't know. You know, I just, that was crazy. And I know you get reports in the swamps of these black cats. I've heard a lot of people talk about black panthers in the swamps. And, you know, I don't know what they thinking a black panther is, but yeah, a jaguar would be the answer. It would be a black, and so that's a pretty vicious animal. Believe me, I know. They're all over the place, and they range from South America all the way up into Texas, and people see them all the way up into West Texas, and I know they're in Louisiana too. So that's very possible. The only other predator that I could think of that could drag something up into a tree, like a hog like that, would be a black, you know, if it's a panther, it would be a jaguar. You know, and I think most people, though, and it's funny because you don't get reports, I don't get many reports of, like, of regular jaguars with the spots, with the yellow and black. It's always black. It's always like this black panther type creature. So maybe there's a population with that gene that breeds and has just stayed in that area, and they've thrived in that area. You know, I don't know. I mean, they can hunt at night, and being black, whew, you'd have a pretty good advantage. You know, a lot of foliage in them swamps, a lot of places where you can hide. You know, I mean, Dana, you are definitely a brave soul to be going out there in those swamps, looking for a creature that is, you know, as scary as the Honey Island Swamp Monster. And is there a way that you could tell our audience, as we're wrapping this up, is there a way that you could tell the audience about where we can find your book, or is there a way to find your book or your documentary? Yeah.
I have a website, honeyislandswampmonster.com, and I have a Facebook page too, the Honey Island Swamp Monster page, and my book's on Amazon. There's links on my website and on Facebook, but they're on Amazon. They're either in Kindle or in print, the Honey Island Swamp Monster documentation.
Yeah, and so... definitely would like to get you to join our Facebook group. It's called Paranormal Roundtable, and you can join it, and if you would like or whatever. And you know, we definitely would like to have you. I don't know if you're on in the group or not.
I think I am.
Yeah, I think I kicked you out though because you were being a sass mouth one day. But I'll re-invite you though.
You kicked me off.
I'm kidding with you, Dana. You know I'm full of.
That might have happened.
I'm over here messing with you. You're not like that at all. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't mess with you or whatever. You know, but you're like, you kicked me off now. No. I'm just giving you the business. I'm messing with you. No, seriously. But Dana, okay. So if you're not on there, yeah, folks, and you can interact with her on Facebook on our group, and she's in there. Definitely interesting stuff. And your grandfather, definitely a pioneer. And that 8mm footage, very compelling. It's very neat. And I'll tell you what, here's what happened, folks. I'm not making this up. I just I texted Ken Gerhardt, and I just told him, this is funny. Okay, so I just texted him, and I said, hey, you ever been to the Honey Island Swamp? We should do a show out there with Dana Holyfield. And he said, yep, I was there in 2019. I've never met Dana, but we've spoken on the phone. What kind of show did you have in mind? And I told him what I told you, because I'm an honest person. I said, I'll stay at the hotel, and you guys go deep in the swamp and Photoshop me in later. So he sent me back a laughing emoji, and then I said, I'm interviewing her now. And he said, oh, nice. And so I said, I'm going to mention you on the show that we're going out there. So, you know, you never know what might happen. You know, Ken, he's a globetrotter. He might get me to go out there, and maybe, who knows, maybe we can, you know, Lyle Blackburn wrote a book about the Sinister Swamps. That's a great book. I'm going to get him on the show soon, and we're going to talk about that. He's been on the show before, but definitely going to talk about this, because this is compelling, interesting information. And I really, really enjoy talking to you and having you on the show. And I appreciate your friendship. And you never know, folks. You never know. Maybe we're going to go out there and make a documentary. Like I said, we're going to figure out the CGI for me. And then, you know, but we'll have the other big players out there. You know, and we'll see if I can get Lyle and Ken to go out there, and we can all go tromping. Well, they can. And like I said, I'll be CGI'd, but somebody will play. We'll have somebody play me.
Post Malone
can play me. We'll cover up his tattoos.
I think
Malone.
I might be the closest in size. You can
you're almost me as heavy as me. Yeah. I'm 340. How much you weigh?
I don't know. At 320? This point. Probably.
So you're closer to me. We'll give you a cap.
Probably. Yeah.
put the cap down over your eyes and just kind of talk like me a little bit deeper. There you go. Yeah. So, anyways, maybe we'll go out there. And if your son is doing those tours, like I said, who knows? You never know what might happen. Maybe we can go out there, put together a documentary or something. That might be interesting.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, anyway, we'll see what happens in the future, and we'll be in touch.
All right.
In the meantime, folks, Dana Holyfield, check out her website, check out her book, and definitely be looking on TV. She's always on TV in these different shows, you know. So thank you for coming on, Dana, and for everyone at
the
PRT team.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was good talking to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was interesting talking to you. Everyone out there in the Paranormal Roundtable family, good night.
Good night.